I would like to remind all of ourselves to take a moment and cultivate the altruistic motivation seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite, kind, mother-sentient beings. With that kind of bodhicitta motivation or bodhisattva's attitude, that we should all participate in this teaching. I think it is very important for each of us to ask this question to ourselves. Why are we participating in spirituality? What is the reason behind, or what's the purpose of participating in Dharma? So if we find in a real good answer, if you will, to this particular question, why am I participating in Dharma? Then once we really see the reasons clearly for ourselves, I think that would make a difference in practicing Dharma. As we face difficulties, we would be able to cope better with the difficulties.
Sonja, that those in a legion pagan associated to Santander's associated to that transignal to Santander's Tusakin do Savina and a Kanga Tunjin Zomba. Ane mulitin to de tola aneki sosu ene gang gobati never me patol sun yueta. Kahi ene pe mulitin kiba tobi inaya. Ane pe rang gobati tang yunu, soe tunchin la sopata, and tagana iki gobatinzo, dosa de tintin somalo. Aniki da kali kabuchi yungu was the madaki mamuchi chagdo was.
If we look around ourselves with everybody who is in our neighborhood or the city we live in, we find a lot of differences in our life situations. The fact of the matter is that we are all human beings. That being said, that there are many people, I think they are able to have the kind of resources they seek to make their life comfortable and happy. So they're very successful in doing that, and their life seems to be going very smoothly, And almost everything they wish for is coming, becoming a reality, so to speak. But then there are others in the same neighborhood or the city that despite the greatest efforts they make to get what they want, but they're always, facing many more difficulties, and they lack resources that they are seeking. So we do see such differences among ourselves, living in the same neighborhood or city. Now the point I'm trying to make is, we do find difference in terms of, finding comforts and happiness in life, or running into more difficulties and problems. You see, not only, between ourselves who are living in the same, dwelling in the same city or the neighborhood, but within one family, family members or the children who belong to the same parents, as they grow up, they seem to have different life experiences. Things are working quite well for some. Life is kind of a nice and smooth and cool, but for others, it's a struggle. It is painful, and such differences do exist, and we observe them. So now we really want to explore, so what contributes to, what are the conditions and, if you will, causes produce, if you will, these differences. So making great efforts in this life is everything. It leads to success. Well, then that's obviously not, seems to be the right answer, because everybody making the same efforts do not seem to get the same results. It's in this life we know that maybe a lot of the people are putting the same efforts, but they do get different outcomes. So one of the things often people seem to tell each other is, you got to find a good job, So when you find a good job, then you really need to stick to that job, just work hard at it. And then you will be, you'll have success in life, right? You're going to get the money, and then when you have money, you can do almost anything you want. Yeah, so it seems like the money is the solution to all of things. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't really necessarily seem to be the true. Money is not answer to a lot of the things or to everything. I don't think we really necessarily have to explore deep down the reasons for all of these things, but if we make a sort of a cursory observations, if you will, around ourselves, some people seem to have a very kind of an easy life, as we might say. They don't seem to be working hard, at least this is what we see, but they could have a nice house, they have a nice car, they have everything they want. And other people are struggling so hard and paying the bills, and still life is a struggle.
So
And I'm sure you know about these things, you know, more than I do. You observe these things at, you know, out there, so to speak, that, you know, some people really, they are working 16 hours, but still they're short of money. You know, they can't afford to buy a house. You know, and, you know, they have to really cut down on the expenses and try to, you know, eat simple food and kind of, you know, basically trying to survive despite putting 16 hours of work every day, and still the money is not really much there. So the point I'm trying to make is, you know, it really, the success that we talk about in this life is not everything to do with what we do here and now. You know, putting a lot of efforts into whatever we need to do, or working really hard, you know, or killing ourselves over our job, as we might say, if that is the real cause of success, then everybody who is doing that, killing themselves over the job, should have a success. But that's not a success story we have. So the real cause, I think, is really beyond just simply working hard or putting a lot of efforts in one's job or whatever things one needs to do. But the real thing is really it has to do with one's karmic actions. You know, the positive karmic actions that one have accumulated, I think, are the real causes of success. So, you know, when we talk about lay or karma or karmic actions, basically we can talk about the good karmas or the positive karmas and the bad karmas or the negative karmas. So in the case of people who do not seem to be working hard in this life, as far as our eyes can see, or our ears can hear, but they seem to have everything. Life is very smooth sailing for them. Well, that has a lot to do with, I think, whatever good karmas they accumulated in the past. And there are others who are working so hard, you know, honest to whoever is up there or down below, but still not making a lot of money, you know. It's just like so difficult. Life is just a lot of struggle, but that also has to do with negative karmas that they have accumulated in the past. And then there are some people who are so successful in making money or like accumulating wealth. I mean, they have just like, you know, just amazing success. But then from another side, that their health is so bad that they just keep on falling sick and just, you know, they couldn't enjoy their resources. So why are these two things happening in somebody's life? A great success in making money and a bad health, you know, going down the tube. Health is going down the tube. So why are these two things happening? It's because of two different sets of karmas being created, good and bad. So from karmic point of view, someone who has been fortunate to achieve a human life is basically he or she or us or they created positive karmas before, because only positive karmas lead to human rebirth. And then someone who is very successful in accumulating wealth or resources, as I might say, is because you know, they practice what we call generosity or dan in Sanskrit, chinba in Tibetan. So as a result of their generous heart and mind, generosity, that they are able to have resources in this life.
So
And as far as the bad health is concerned, you know, it is a remnant of the previous bad karmas. You know, in the past lives, you know, one caused a lot of health issues to other people, one beat the others or the harm others in many ways. And as a result of those negative karmas, those karmas ripened, you know, in the form of rebirths, in bad migrations. But once we got out of that, the remnants of the karmas are left, and which bring this kind of a poverty, this kind of a bad health, or the I should say, poor health, in this lifetime.
Kache ene super really say ene kare ina tan deba kanye yose kiche ene ane seringbo mevse se tundun se ane ba shenu kete yungu was.
Some people are very lucky to be born rich or born in rich families, but unfortunately, they don't live that long. The life is short for them.
The karishyev is na sepe tse tungs. Me shiva ngamala sinje jen soa chepe namiti ane tse dele rangka ane mese tundu ki chabres. Be ten zangbo tang nirik yakwe longshu pizzawa shung yin na ya ko langsa ake guya karishyev shiva ngamala rangka sinje jen soa chepe namiti rangka res.
So as a result of generosity, so one was able to be reborn in a rich family, but as a result of, shortening the lives of other beings in previous lives, or killing them, or cutting short their lifespan, so in this life, one experiences a short life.
But ne na se zan ni trai me ba chong ne kuzon se shen ti kwa ti kare se shen se na dung di ne mangs shawan hama la ane sen ji yin la rang dung ni pe na se mang buta tang ya kateri ki les nga ba sa ni ti na mi de rang kore res.
So as I said before, one could be very rich in this life, but one could have a terrible health, and it's almost like one has a chronic disease, and so basically couldn't enjoy one's own resources. So this kind of situation is due to different kinds of karma that one has accumulated. Good karma, generosity led to resources, and abusing other sentient beings. Abuse, I use the term in a very broad sense, beating others or, you know, how she's hurting others or, you know, killing them, and all of these are abuses. So abusing other sentient beings in the past lives has resulted in, poor health. For
example,
in this life. So the point I'm trying to make here is, like, you know, how we could create both good and karmas, and they both could ripen in one lifetime. So something good about life due to the good karma, and something bad about life due to the bad karma.
And that's in the middle of the carisana. Tā kālī māngbō jābī yīnā ānā lōngshū pōnggō yātā zū kārī shabrīs nā jīmbā mātōng bī yīnā tā jībrīs.
So, basically all the miseries and the bad things and the problems kicking in our life are due to, we say, negative karmas, that we are making so much effort. We are very sincere in working hard to earn our living, but yet we don't have success. We basically live in a poverty. So, which means, so we were not generous, you know, in our past, and we are very miserly about our resources. So as a result, it doesn't matter how much efforts we make in this life, we stay poor. So poverty could come from a number of negativities, not just one, right? Being miserly about things, of course, is a main cause of poverty. Or like damaging others' property, or stealing things from others, or hurting others' property. All of these bad karmas could result in poor living and conditions. So what I'm talking about is how karmas are responsible for our good and bad life situations and experiences.
So
So my underneath all of these things, what I want to convey to you is that if you really want all the good things happen to us in here and hereafter, then we really need to create positive actions. And so that means, you know, we need spirituality or dharma, because dharma teaches us to do the positive thing, not the negative things. And then if we are really getting fed up with the difficulties and problems and the miseries in our life, then we better take a lesson from that, that we should not create negativities, because negativities will bring, I mean, there's no doubt about it, negativities do bring negative outcomes to the results. So if you don't want difficulties and problems in life, we are really getting fed up, you know, up to our neck, then we learn to stop creating negativities. So basically, you know, participating in dharma, spiritually, or cultivating dharma, or practicing it, whatever you want to call it, what it really involves is that we stop creating negativities or generating delusions. All of these are the real causes of suffering, what we don't want. And, you know, cultivate the positive states of mind and create positive karmas, because these are the causes of all the goodness and happiness we are seeking. So dharma, in a very simple term, means, I mean, do the positive things and have the positive things, and don't do the negative things if you don't want the negative things. So when we really talk about finding the kind of peace and happiness and the goodness we are really seeking, it could only come from, you know, transforming our mind through spirituality or dharma. I mean, we cannot get the kind of happiness, peace, and the goodness we are seeking through power and influence, or through material resources. Yes, they do bring certain comforts and, say, you know, change our situation here and there a little bit. But in ultimate sense, these are not the real causes of happiness and peace. Of course, we can't achieve what we want through the weapons of mass destruction, you know. So when it comes to transforming our mind through spirituality or dharma, the responsibility lies in oneself. It does not matter, how old we are. We could be, you know, young or very young, middle-aged, you know, old or real, real old. But we all need to cultivate spirituality, and that is our personal responsibility. Because the reason is very simple and straightforward. It doesn't matter, regardless of our age differences, we all want to be happy, we don't want unhappiness. See, if that is what we all agree or really aspire for, then dharma is the source of happiness, and it is the solution to end suffering. So such are the reasons, you know, why spirituality is so important to us, and why we need to cultivate or practice spirituality. When we talk about practicing dharma or spirituality, of course, first we have to educate ourselves in spirituality. We have to know what we are going to practice, right? So once we have the knowledge about what we are going to practice, then we got to practice it, means cultivate it. We cannot practice Dharma in the sense of putting on a jewelry. Dharma is not a jewelry to put on from the outside and look, you know, cool and beautiful. It is something we need to cultivate within ourselves. When it comes to cultivating Dharma or practicing Dharma, it has all to do with affecting our state of mind. You know, transforming our state of mind for better. That is what practice means. That is what cultivation means. Dharma is not something to be talked about or to become a big mouth or to give a lecture or presentations. It is not an ornament to put on and look beautiful and, you know, attractive. It is something we need to, cultivate within our mind and transform our mind into positive and better state of mind.
So that
So when we, you know, understand that, you know, practicing Dharma means training our mind, transforming our mind. When our mind is transformed, disciplined, trained in that sense, of course our mind is really thinking positively. So how could we really do anything that hurts others when we are thinking positively? So if we stop harming others, that means we are, you know, we have stopped creating negativities. And thinking positively does not simply mean stopping harming others, but it also could lead us to benefit others, to work for others. So if we stop creating negativities, then we really don't have to worry about the negative outcomes, because that is in the law of nature. If you don't do negative things, you know, you will never experience negative outcomes. So if we stop creating negativities, we will never have to worry about suffering experiences, because without negativities, there won't be suffering. So as we know what practicing Dharma means, it means affecting our state of mind, transforming our attitudes and transforming our mind. Then in the process of doing that, we stop harming others and we start to benefit others wherever we can. And also we started to see that, well, we have stockpiled a lot of negativities from many past lifetimes. Okay, we are very rich in that sense. So now we really need to reduce that stockpile. We need to purify our mind of all the negativities we did before. Well, we are not going to do it anymore, but we all, whatever we did is still stockpiled in our mind, and we need to clean up, do the cleaning. So when our really mind is affected in a positive sense, then I think relatively speaking, of course, you know, we will face less difficulties in abandoning negativities or purifying negativities, and we will it will be easier for us to do the positive things. So when we are truly inspired and we really say that, okay, this is what I got to do. I need to, bring inner transformation, positive transformations within myself. And this is what is so amazing, inspiring. When we get the inspiration, then I don't think we are going to procrastinate, you know, our practice. You know, we are not going to push our practice into later time. You know, we are going to do now. Do it now.
Yes.
So when we really don't have that sense of, they don't have that inspiration, that appreciation of the Dharma, changing our state of mind, and that sense of urgency, I need to do it now, if we keep on procrastinating, you know, if we get kind of locked into that procrastination process, if you will, well, then what the great Tibetan master Jigme Dorje Rinpoche said, you know, could come true. And he said, just kind of looking at one life, right, if somebody's going to live about 60 years, he said, well, for the first 20 years, I even didn't care about Dharma. Okay, I have no clue, I'm a clueless guy, and the 20 years went by.
Okay.
So one could be thinking that, okay, I'm still very young, and I'm kind of a teenager, and I'm kind of a young and agile, and so, I mean, there's a lot of time later on, so I'm just going to kind of hang out. And so the 20 years goes by before we realize, you know, the hangout time is not that long, actually. And then the next 20 years, you said, you know what, oh my gosh, I could have practiced, you know what, I need to practice, you know, I need to change my way of thinking positively. But I need to do that, and next 20 years goes by.
So
it's kind of nice, like, to tell, you know, I really need to do it now, I need to change it, you know, it's not too late. But keep on thinking, I need to do it, and next 20 years goes by, which really means that the laziness of procrastination is blessing us.
Right?
And then the remaining next 20 years, you say, know what? Well, excuse me saying that, Geshe Langpa said, shoot, 40 years gone by. Well, I have 20 more years, you know, and then you just kind of regret for having not been able to do it. Just you keep worrying about, you know, I should have practiced, you know, but, you know, what? So just keep on worrying for having not been able to practice, and the next 20 years, you know, go by.
So that Lord is that message tomboy, tonze, songwe, nantariyins.
And then the great master concludes, he said, you know, this is the, you know, story of an empty life. Okay, first 20 years, didn't care about Dharma, clueless. Next 20 years, said, okay, I got to do it, goes by. And the remaining 20 years, they just keep on regretting, oh, shoot, I should have practiced, you know, not kind of, you know, I have to do all these other things. So then the life ends, so this is the story of empty life. So our goal is not to fall in these parameters of the life story. We don't want this to be our life story. You know, we want to be outside. We want a different story about life. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So the point I'm trying to make is, it doesn't matter, you know, how old we are or not old we are, you know, because we really got to kind of inspire ourselves and grab the opportunities, if you will, to do whatever practice we could. Because, you know, in many ways, the age differences don't matter that much if the time goes that fast,
see.
So as I mentioned that, yes, it's very important for us to practice spirituality, you know. But then, you know, we also need to educate ourselves about the spirituality that we're going to, you know, practice. If we have no clue about spirituality, then just simply saying, I need to practice it, or I want to practice it, it doesn't really make much of a sense. It's just like, you know, we are some kind of locked ourselves up in the cyberspace with not much clue, and, you know, something's happening, but we really don't know what is happening, you know. So it is like, you know, we have no idea about our destination, but we just kind of want to go somewhere. We just want to go, you know, that's all we want, right? So we're really, I mean, as Geshe-la used the word, we are just confused. I mean, we, you know, we are never going to get anywhere. There's no destination. Or maybe make this way, that we really want to go to a very happy place. Hopefully there's one. Right, that would be our destination. But we don't know where it is. Okay, so we just want to go to the happy place. Okay, so we really, as I said, we will never get there. So because there is a certain part in our mind which is a confused state of mind. So simply wanting to go to a happy place, not know where it is, you keep on going and kind of wandering everywhere. So we will end up, you know, nowhere actually. We just kind of, detoured, you know, everywhere and not getting to the place we want to be.
You don't know where to go. There's going on and on. Somebody asks you, where are you going? I'm going to the best place. Where is the best place? Then no answer. So that time, he said,
So the point I'm trying to make here is we really need to learn about a spirituality that we are going to practice or cultivate. And when we talk about Chö, which is the Tibetan term, translation of the Sanskrit term Dharma, and best English word probably everybody found is spirituality, unless there's another one you can give me later. When the way we understand Chö, or the Dharma spirituality, is something that can affect our future lives. That's what we're talking about. We're not really so much concerned about this life, if you will, but we're really talking about, you know, how to affect future lives. So if we are really, preoccupied with this life's interest, right? How can I be rich? How can I have a higher position? How can I have a big name? And all of these things. So with such attitudes and interest and motivation or agenda, if we come into Dharma, even if what we really practice Dharma, it does not become spiritual practice. It does not become Dharma practice. So we could find authentic spirituality, but with our own, own worldly interest and agenda, that we might spoil the whole thing. That what we practice may not become our spiritual practice. So we really have to watch out our motivations and hidden agendas, hidden meaning like worldly attitudes, worldly concerns, And also, if somebody says, okay, I want to be some kind of a clairvoyant, you know, I want that extra sensory perception, so that, you know, oh, I want to see some kind of interesting colors, you know, in the cyberspace. I want to be some kind of a visionary, you know, so that people don't see things, but I see some, you know, rainbows in Netherlands. Well, with all those attitudes, if we come into Dharma, we are spoiling the Dharma. What we practice does not become spiritual
practice.
So if study Lamrim treatises, Lamrim is a Tibetan term which means stages of the path. Treatises, so we will learn a lot about with what kind of attitudes and motivations we should practice spirituality. Even if the spirituality we practice is authentic, but with all our worldly concerns and in attitudes, you know, we may contaminate the practice and it won't become a practice in the first place. So once a great Domtenpa, a lay person practitioner, Domtenpa Ubosaka, was approached by someone and asked, you know, could you advise me how to practice Dharma? And the Domtenpa said, you got to give up worldly concerns. So the point I want to make here is that as we engage in spiritual practice, all of us, our motivation should be to be able to get out of samsara. and more than that, to be able to become a Buddha for the sake of all sentient beings. Okay? And don't get too much stuck with this lifetime. So if we're too much stuck with the interests of this lifetime, and then engage in Dharma, our practice becomes questionable practice.
That thing, Tarang Shokeng and Samal, Narang Zuyame, Samal, Penya Ked Shubings.
So as I often do, these are some of the things I thought are really very relevant and important to all of us, including myself. As I always say, when I speak to you, I'm also speaking to myself. You know, I'm not just telling you to do something that I am not required to do. I put myself in the audience, and as much as I'm talking to you, I'm talking to myself that we all need to, practice properly.
No, no.
So with that, I want to return to where we left off in this wonderful text called A Miscellaneous Collection of Kadamba Geshe's Personal Advisors. That's a long title to say, but it's a wonderful text.
Kadamba Geshe Mangbo, Geshe Mangbo, Ketikandi, Kyunghe Taishunsen, Bangkannang, Chesa, Zoe Mabdenis.
So this is a kind of a treasure, text in the sense that there have been many great realized Kadamba Geshe's, so many of them have been approached and, so asked for advices and, asked for answers to different questions. So that's what we are going through.
Okay.
So now today we are going to talk about another great Kadamba Geshe by the name of Geshe Kamlungpa has got to say. First, Geshe Kamlungpa wants us to understand that it is, very difficult to find a precious human life that is characterized by 8 freedoms and 10 enriching factors, 18 wonderful qualities. This kind of a human life is not easy to come by. Of course, here Geshe Kamlungpa simply mentions this, but if you go back in the Lamrim treatises, such as Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, which is available in English, or such as the great Lamrims of Lama Tsongkhapa available in English, you go through those Lamrims, then we started to look from many different angles and perspectives to understand this. What does it mean that precious human life with freedoms and enriching factors is difficult to find? So we look in terms of the causes we need to create and accumulate. That's a tough one. Okay, we need in terms from exemplary point of view. Also, we can understand how difficult it is to find such a life. So as I mentioned, a precious human life is characterized by 8 leisures or freedoms, dalbajya in Tibetan, and 10. Endowments or the enriching factors, 8 qualities, and there is your home assignment. Go and figure it all out. So, but I'm just kind of pointing you where to look for these things, right? You can either look in the Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand, Lamrim, by the great Tibetan master, Gyabchuk Pabongka Dorje Shang, or you can look up in the great Lamrim of Lama Tsongkhapa, and then there are the other small versions of Lamrim there, you can find
that.
And so when you look up in that right section of the Lamrim, then that's where you will find about how it is difficult to find a precious human life with so many qualities from causal point of view, the kind of causes we need to create, and how it is difficult to find this kind of life from exemplary point of view, and so on.
That
Not only that a precious human life is very difficult to find, but once you find it, it is greatly meaningful. Otherwise, you know, Geshe-la wouldn't say it, who cares? That's my, you know, footnote there. But, you know, so, I mean, once you find it, it's greatly meaningful in the sense that we have the potentiality to do the greatest, positive things. Jerumbuche or Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa sitting above me here said in his abbreviated Lamrim called Lamrim Nyamgur, which means the experiential Lamrim or the songs of Lamrim realizations. He said that the precious human life is, as a matter of fact, more precious than a wish-fulfilling gem.
So
if we are lucky to get hold of a wish-fulfilling gem, and if we cherish it and we pray to it, it is said that it can fulfill a lot of our material wishes in this lifetime. You know, I want a lot of wealth. I want to be rich. Okay, the wish-fulfilling gem can certainly provide that. You know, so one will never run out of food, basic necessities of life, and as a matter of fact, one could get almost any material goods that one wishes for. But what the wish-fulfilling gem cannot do, or we cannot ask it to do, is that I don't want to be reborn in a bad migration's next life. So you kind of, help me. The wish-fulfilling gem has no power to do that. Okay? Well, I want to be Buddha for the sake of sentient being. That's my goal. The wish-fulfilling gem fails to provide that wish. But when we say that precious human life is much more precious than a wish-fulfilling gem, what we're really talking about is that this kind of life has such a great potentiality that if we do, if we are determined and if we do dedicate ourselves to in the pursuit of enlightenment completely, it is very possible for us to become a Buddha in this very lifetime. Now that is an amazing achievement that one could have. So in other words, that by making good use of a precious human life, we will be able to gain any kind of spiritual realizations one can possibly imagine. Of course, to be able to achieve this kind of life again in the next life, that's very possible. Or to be able to be reborn as a divine being, a celestial being, that is very possible. But beyond those things, those are not wonders, actually. One could also liberate oneself completely from samsara, which is called, one can become an arhat, or arhant in Pali. Or beyond that, as I mentioned earlier, that one could become a fully enlightened being, a Buddha.
Yes. Anand. That Kong Sung at the Tanjore Nyepa Hindu Kavis, losing that Kaburis. Then this one's a Tuck Kaburis, Tuck Karishagurus, the West, the Sedajiba, just a Karishagurus and a Sujim making debit in the songs. Sujim de Sosu making debit pays us Kaniki in a co Sunshi Kibushagrava, then Nayiga, rangjule yebi da chirim de yan da rangjule chirim kali ji yene te ani mig debi gin sungres khachne re tangi hamares
so geshe khamrung ba tells us that it's very difficult to find the kind of precious human life that we have found today. Therefore, he says, we must abide by pure ethics. Okay, he's really emphasizing, observing pure ethics. We should protect, or we should observe our ethics and protect it just as we would protect our eyes, right? We don't want anything to damage our eyes. So in the same way, we do not want to damage our ethics.
That children make a debut in some Seattle, and they rather show one down that, Chimba the Samalo, she Tony, and those in a cut number is.
So, of course, Geshe Kanumba has made a general statement here that we should protect our ethics or observe our ethics as we would observe or protect our eyes. So, he's not specifying any particular ethics here, so which means it includes monastic ethics and layperson's ethics. Now there is, as I always say, basic ethics, that is applicable to one and all. It doesn't matter whether we are monks or nuns or not monks and nuns. We all need to observe the basic ethics of abandoning the 10 negative actions of body, speech, and mind. Okay, that is a common ethics we all need to do. So how should we understand chultim, or which is translated as ethics or shila in Sanskrit? Again, it is a state of mind. Okay, it is a state of mind that prevents us from doing negativities. Okay, that protects us from, negativities, if you will. So it safeguards us from the pitfalls, if you will, of negativities.
So jie bang, so jie de bang ge shen, da so jie bong da song shen ji, da so jie ba bong wa, de gan na yin so jie, lu ji guan shen mi le ba, so jie ba ane, ma ji ban lan ba, ane ka ren da.
So, for example, there are three negativities of the body, as we say, or physical negativities that we should not do. And these are killing, right, stealing, and indulging in what we call sexual misconduct or adultery in this particular case. Mm. And so when we say, I'm observing ethics pertaining to these negativities, so that means we commit ourselves not to engage in them. So that kind of a state of mind, right, commitment, it prevents us from indulging in these negativities, and that's what we call ethics. So we can also commit ourselves not to lie or cheat others, not to cause disharmony among people or divide people up into, this and that, or, become enemies practically, and not to say the unpleasant things to others which hurt others' feelings, which is the hurt speech, and not indulge in what we call the frivolous, idle gossiping, talking about everything and about nothing. No substance to what we talk about. So when we commit ourselves not to indulge in these speech activities, negativities, that is ethics. It prevents us from doing those negativities.
That each going to summary, not sense, no similar to us. Not sense, each that zone is zeta round to tayag. That never see at the nervous, never say something to somebody. Never see at the ponta. And then
So And then there are the three negativities of the mind. Nafsem, covetousness, coveting for others' good. Like, how nice if I get that one, you know. And the harmful intent, you know. Just wishing, you know, bad things happen to other people or hurting others, you know, mentally, you know. Sending all the bad things, you know, mentally to others. And loktha, which is the wrong view or distorted views. So these are the three negativities of the mind. When we commit ourselves not to indulge in them, that is the ethics which prevents us from such negativities.
So
as I said, those are the basic ethics, you know, applicable to all of us, whether we have taken monastic ordination or not. But then, among lay practitioners, you know, we may have taken what is called layperson's ethics or vows, okay? Upasaka or upasika vows in Sanskrit. So there are actually five of them. So we may have decided to take all five. We may have taken, you know, four of the five, three of the five, two of the five, but one of the five, and there's no excuse to that. Otherwise, you have no vows. You know, if you don't take one, so it will be zero vows. So whatever, you know, layperson's ethics we have committed ourselves to, again, we have to observe that intact. So then even as a lay practitioner, you know, it doesn't, you know, maybe you have taken the bodhisattva ethics on top of that. Maybe you have taken the tantric ethics, the highest level ethics. So even as a lay practitioner, one could have taken so many levels of ethics that one has to keep them, intact. So if we observe our ethics and protect it just as we would protect our eyes, then it is like all the causes of the good things are in the palm of your hand or my hand. Okay? So you want a good rebirth, there is one. It's just sitting in the palm of your hand. Okay? All other good
things.
That's because the great Indian master Acharya Chandrakirti said, and Kesala quoted the lines from his memory, that in order to find fortunate rebirths or the good rebirths, there is no other cause other than observing pure ethics.
So
then if we protect our ethics just as we would protect our eyes, I think that's great benefits that come to
us.
So when we talk about how observing ethics could lead to good rebirths as human being or as a divine being, while still these are the temporary outcomes we are talking about, I mean, those are not our real goals, you know. Our real goal is by observing pure ethics that we can get out of samsara, that we can become Buddha. Next, Geshe Kamlumpa tells us that as precious as the human life with all those qualities is, but the fact of the matter is, it is transient kind of a life. You know, our illusory body, you know, there's really no way of figuring out how long this is going to last. You know, our body is very illusory, and it could snap any time, or it might go for a little while. So while we have this, illusory body, we should try to engage in actions physically, verbally, and mentally, which accord with the principles of Dharma. Physically means try to do the positive things, physically, verbally, and mentally. This body we have, we often talk about physical and mental aggregates, skandhas, right? That's what you heard about. So we all have five skandhas or aggregates, physical and mental aggregates. But this body which we have is just like a magical creation. You know, if we are going to watch a magician play his or her, you know, tricks, you know, so our body is really like that, you know, as transient as a magical creation. Conventionally thinking, or we think that, okay, those who are young, of course, they are expected to live much longer, right? Those who are much older, they should, you know, live sooner. But that's our conventional thinking. But we really don't know, you know, who will go first. So the lesson that we need to learn from what Geshe Kangma says is our life is very transient and ephemeral, regardless of our age. Okay, of course, conventionally we would like to think that you know, the younger you are, the more time you're expected to have, and if you have already lived long enough, maybe pretty soon you will phase out. But we don't know who will phase out first. And we observe so many things happening to young people, right? At the prime of their youth, as you heard Geshe-la use some of the English words, party and the young people. Okay, they're very young, very beautiful, very sexy, attractive, and they kind of carpool and hit the road to go to the party, and they imagine all kinds of things happening, right? I'm going to go to the party, and I'm going to have a just fabulous time with my friends, hanging out, meeting, and dancing, you know, throughout the night, and all these things. But on the way, there is a terrible accident, and before you get to the party, your life is snapped. Okay? So what does that mean? That means despite all your imaginations and what you want and everything, they are so young and beautiful and everything, you did not have control over your life, and your life snapped right there. Okay? So that tells us about the illusory nature of our life. So as a spiritual practitioner, it's very important for us to really, realize that fact of our life. You know, because there is no certainty when we are going to die. The time of death is uncertain. I mean, nobody can fix it, nobody has ever fixed it, and nobody can ever will. You know? So it is so uncertain and unpredictable that it can happen any time, this very moment. Now, we are not just trying to scare people here, you know, this is going to happen, trying to scare people. This is not a scare tactic. I mean, we are talking about the fact of the life. The whole purpose of really thinking about the impermanence of life, the transitoriness of life, is so that we become really a little more realistic about life. You see, life could snap any time, and so while we have time now, we try to create more positive actions and to do our practice. I mean, that's the whole purpose, not because we have nothing better to do and scaring ourselves, put ourselves in depression. Geshe-la didn't say that, just to make my point, the translator's point. So, it's the whole purpose of thinking about impermanence of life is how can we make best use of the opportunities right here, now, that I have.
No, gawa kandi je sa pa yin na ante ane ane melam te melam je simba ke go gres labar de ta duji je gawa sa ta gawa sa ki tu yin gawa sa ki yin na ya ane melam ke wan ke ane san je ko ma thoya ke ta jul pa mo gres.
And the next, Kesha Kamrupa wants us to tell us that we better dedicate our positive actions altruistically. Because after all, the kind of positive actions that we accumulate are also impermanent. Okay, they could be destroyed. You know, so before, I mean, anything like that happened, we should altruistically dedicate our positive energy for the benefit of other sentient beings.
Well, that is good then this one. Ta kangayas, kangayas, matas, kandichi inayas ta, pe gengyo kandichi inayas ta, ane ta shetan sige na, duji ta dumashi chut samanlo ta juma nangi chagyo. Kangayas mata, juma yinpes, kelaya denbar manzin par, kemba thons. Gare na ta kandichi inayas, ane ta le, chagyo amares kanango ta, juma nangi insu, juma le, Jume Norda, Jume and Ta Zoo, the Lanzo, Kaniki, and Juma Sevatele, Tabasing Sukhang Marva, the Limbo Hivizinamat. Did Nayig Tajia Maricana.
And the next Kesha Kamrupa wants to tell us that whatever exists, both permanent and impermanent phenomena, in an ultimate sense, they are just like a magic or magical creation, and nothing exists in and of itself. Nothing is objectively existent or independently. So therefore, we should not grasp at the true existence of things, which is not there in the first place. Okay, and so which basically means do not get attached to things. You know, and the example is, if we are watching a magic show and a beautiful person is created, right, and given to you as your friend or partner, it would be too silly to get attached to this magical person because it's not going to last anyway long. There's no substance to it, you see. So it's the same thing. In the ultimate sense, there is no inherent substance or existence to all things that exist. So it's better to let go our attachment to them. Don't get stuck to them through attachment.
Taya juma nang irese zeni tenje minu ba juma nang irese sungu yamare. Kon juntante juma nang se sumare sungu yar. Tele chagi se yamare.
Of course, I want to clarify that, you know, when we say that phenomena are to be seen like a magical creation, but in all respects, the magical creation and what we are talking about are not the same thing. Okay, magical creation, it is just an illusion created for a while, but it does not perform any function, right? If you're going to drink a magical water, it's not going to, you know, quench your thirst, in other words. Okay, it's just a footnote. Okay. But on the other hand, conventional phenomena do exist and they do function. They do serve purposes. Okay, so in that respect, magic and the conventional reality is not one and the same thing. But the point that we're trying to make is, when we look at how things actually exist, not at the surface level, how do they really exist, you know, then what we will see is that they are really like a magical creation. They are created out of causes and conditions. Nothing exists in it itself. And it's pretty much, you know, there is no inherent substance to things or phenomena. We are just kind of a fabricating stuff and kind of throwing onto the phenomena and getting us stuck and attached with them. So don't do that.
Juma kenge ane diwi shimbo to talan chubi chena ane ta juma ke koran ke da talan tongu te kenba yu amare, tele kenba yu amare. Temo aten zo ke ta kubwane tende yina te kenba ta nawa te kenba nyinga yu deyar. Ane ta Jume ngaji mata be ta kanza tili thondi chani ko kei yama kurang ngobo kani chena ko juma kishisa ke juma seya ke ngobo kani kuta rang thongu yama tu juma thongu yama talang thongu kei ke thongu yama.
Right.
Ata tili nashiris.
So we could have totally different perceptions with regard to the ultimate nature of things or phenomena. How do they actually exist? That is the, you know, the question, central question we ask. And so we could have different perceptions or understanding of that. And now, just to go back to the example about the magic show, there could be three different perceptions here too. Like, say, in the case of a magician, you know, who has created horses and elephants out of the twigs and pebbles, okay? For this person, the magician, there are appearances of elephants and horses. He sees, you know, elephants and horses that he created, but he knows that these are not real horses and elephants because I'm playing the magic here. Are you with me? That's one perception, right? So there are appearances of horses and elephants to his eyes or whatever, but he knows these are not the real thing. I'm just fooling people here. Okay. But then the people who are at the magic show, you know, who got kind of influenced by his tricks or his incantations or whatever it is that he's doing. For these people, not only are there the appearances of horses and elephants, but they also kind of for a while believe, wow, real horses and elephants are here. You see that? So they cling to these appearances as being real horses and elephants, which is different for the magician himself. Are you with me so far? Then after the magic show comes the people who are not part of the magic. What do they see? They see the reality as it is. It's just the pebbles and the twigs. There are no horses and elephants, okay? Even the appearances or the clinging, it's just simply a handful of pebbles and the twigs there. That's the reality it is. Okay, so three different perceptions, right? So we could have the similar kind of parallel perceptions with regard to how things actually exist. We call it ultimate nature of phenomena. So, I mean, there are, of course, a lot of things to talk about. These are some of the, you know, harder topics, you know, how, you know, we establish the existence of conventional reality and how do we establish the existence of ultimate reality. Okay, we are not going to go there today. I have a prayer request for David Wong, who has passed away. And then I have an announcement, quick, especially people living nearby or in Pasadena. Today from 11 to 5, there is some kind of a Himalayan festival going around there at the Pacific Asia Museum in Pasadena. So if you're in the neighborhood or you have a lot of time, you want to go there. So there is Himalayan festival from 11 to 5. So there are, you know, Pakistanis and Nepalis and the Tibetans and I don't know who else, you know. So they are selling stuff and they are doing some performances. Let us put all of our positive energies together and dedicate our collective positive energy or merit for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great holy beings, wherever they are in any part of the universe, live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May these and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. Last but not least, we dedicate our collective merit, punya, for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all become Buddhas soon.
Guru Renam Dalak Niyatayam